Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by these great companies that are giving us money to let you listen to their stuff.
Bullshit, Kyle. We make this show. We make this show. You and me. Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by us.
Someone's got to pay the bills, Dan, because it's not our trading.
All right, roll them.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face. Was I supposed to say that?
Yep.
I supposed to act that out?
Well, hello and welcome to the China Shop, folks. Step right in. Have a seat. Relax. I'm Shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is George, creator of TradeProAcademy.com. George is celebrating a big promotion today. He's the new apprentice. No, he's the new associate boulder roller here in the China Shop. How are you doing today, George?
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me on again.
Yeah.
I am happy.
Who locked the fucking door?
What's going on? What is he doing here?
I specifically changed those locks. I am calling my locksmith. I am pissed.
I was gone for like 3 days. And
yeah.
Hey, Dan, who's that? What's that voice? We didn't talk about who's this third person. We didn't talk about this.
George, I've had this problem with this guy before. He used to be our Scrooge McDuck in impersonator here in the shop.
I'm trying to eject them, but I don't have the right.
We don't have the right sound effect button for that?
Yeah, no. For what? What was the one you're looking for?
Trying to eject it.
Oh, yeah.
So as you can see, we got a great, great month in review episode lined up for you. We're really glad George could join us. We're also glad, Kyle, we're glad to have you back in the shop. It did feel weird without you.
Thanks. Can I have my chair back?
No. No.
All right, I'll earn it back.
Yeah, you don't retain seniority when you leave and come back. You come back as a fresh new hire.
Yeah, I like two milks and one sugar in my coffee, sir.
By the way, I thought I told you to do good or to not fuck up my bet pick and to not do too good, and you kind of did the opposite.
Don't tell me what not to do. You
Oh, thanks for filling in last episode. That was fantastic. I listened to that on the drive home from Oklahoma City. I was cracking up the entire way.
Awesome, man. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having the confidence to leave the show with me to co-host for an episode. It was super fun.
Well, we actually asked Vico first, I got to say.
Oh, it's true.
But he was in Greece.
Got him. Got him.
We don't like confidence being too high around here, folks.
Smack it back down.
Oh, God.
All right. So come on in, folks. We're gonna get started in here. Kyle, I think we just jumped straight to talking about what we did for the month, right? There's nothing else to go over?
I mean, didn't really have any guests. We got a bunch of guests lined up for next month, but I think we just got some bonus specials, so... Unless you want to rehash 50 Shades of Grey again, which I really don't.
Yeah, no, not at all. We did win a bet against George. I'm excited about that. It's the only bet I'm excited about. I think it's the only one we did, right?
No. I've got some consequences for you that I'll spring on you at some point in the show.
God,
and then
damn
let
it.
You make a decision by the end.
Nice try, Dan. Face the music, buddy. I have to as well.
What was our consequences with George again?
I think I have to say that I lost a bet on the show without saying anything as to why.
Just have to, oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. You lost a bet with two bulls in a China shop, and you can't explain it.
Great.
Wait, is he allowed to say that he can't explain it, or he just has to unexplained?
I think he has to just kind of ignore it.
Okay.
Hey guys, welcome to the show of winning traders. I lost a bet with two bulls in a china shop.
Oh god, we might have really hurt your brand.
Yeah. In today's show. Yeah. I'm gonna do it. Hey, it bet is a bet. And yeah, definitely.
Oh, I love it.
I'm gonna just do it on show number 750. We didn't say right, which episode.
Right, there you go. Right.
We are on 94. I'm just kidding.
Sneaky fine print Canadians always getting you.
Speaking of sneaky, I know this might be jumping a little bit ahead, but yeah, I've been going through the Trade Pro courses on futures, so it's probably going to be the focus of my discussion for this episode. But that was pretty sneaky the way you snuck in that no sim trading commitment, just staring at a monitor for 3 weeks.
Right? Isn't that painful? It's excruciating, but it's helpful.
I gotta say, I actually did it today. Today was my first day starting that, and it wasn't that hard.
It's amazing, right? And you picked up the lessons. You learn a lot more when you're not in a position, right, looking to justify it or disqualify it. You learn more of a neutral stance.
I think a lot of the helpfulness of that, too, actually comes down to proving to myself that I don't have to act on every bit of information either.
Exactly, which is key, right? Like, before mm-hmm. you get into a trade, you have to be impartial about it. And a lot of the traders who have done really well going through Trade Pro Academy, mm-hmm. Kyle, have actually honored that commitment. Even the ones who came in with a lot of capital, with experience, et cetera, the people who tend to honor that commitment have a higher chance of success. And it's important, especially early on in the career early on in trading futures, to observe them just so you know how they're different, right? Especially mm-hmm. if you traded stocks, options, et cetera. So good for you for doing it.
Thank you.
Not many people do.
Really?
Oh, I don't. Yeah. Mind. Oh, we see the stats.
I was laughing at the lessons, and nobody makes it past lesson 11.
It's sad, but true. So many people skip that lesson entirely in the exercise. We see all the data on the back end of the analytics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's correlation definitely for commitment to it, and we don't see who did the 3-week challenge, but we see how quickly after that lesson you watch the next one,
right
and yeah, but hey, that's life.
I was planning on going back through and watching some of the previous ones again. That's still allowed, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100%. One of our members that did really well, he took $100 account, believe it or not, to 150,000. Oh, now not over a month,
right
it took him 18 months, but he's now trading full-time, doing his thing. He said he watched the course 5 times before it really like took off. You don't have to watch it 5 times, but you can watch it as many times as you need.
I find it helps me pick up more because you try to incorporate it as you're watching it, but there's just so much new information that keeps coming in that like you'll forget, you know, 5 lessons ago what you learned that lesson. You go back and watch it again. You're like, oh shit, yeah, I forgot about fucking looking at VWAP. Throw that back on there.
Yeah, and as you progress, you start to pull out different information at different stages of the journey, right? Mm-hmm. Like little tidbits become more important. You're like, oh hey, I missed that the first time. So yeah, definitely.
Now, I got to ask real quick. It is a 3-week commitment, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, because in the course, you said 4 weeks.
Ooh. Well, you can look, by the time you get the 3 weeks, you can decide for yourself. But just do the 3 and then see where it goes from there.
It's like, okay, loophole. He said 3 on the paperwork. I'm going 3.
Perfect.
Well, I was going to talk about some of my sim trading results with you too, but when I go back and look through it, it just got so out of control after initially starting like with some discipline that like really this commitment came at like the perfect time. Awesome. Because I was starting to recognize myself that some bad habits were starting to form.
Yeah. It's a lot harder to undo a bad habit than to create the right one from the get-go, right? And it happens. That's the thing with sim. I think we did a show on our podcast that was called Why Your Sim Trading Results Don't Matter. Mm. And, you know, we stick to that. I think with sim, as long as you learn the platform and, you know, when you click places, you're not surprised. I think that's kind of the value. You're maximizing the value out of sim. With futures, there's really like, there's micro products, which means you're taking, you know, $5 risks on a whole trade. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think that that's become a lot more of a beneficial environment. That's become the new sim. Like when I started, they didn't have that. I had to put on full size and it was a little bit trickier as to when to leave sim, when to go, you know, live.
Right.
It was a more difficult decision. Now it's like $5 per trade.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, you have actual baby steps that you can... You don't have to just kick the training wheels off and ride down the interstate.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you're saying, hey, I want to play hockey, and then the next morning you're in the NHL. It's like
it's like that South Park. Those boys have to learn a lesson. They can take our spot and play the Avs.
I love South Park.
Yeah.
Funny show.
Well, Dan, how is your week going? You're doing kind of the same thing. You started making the transition towards futures as well.
And you know, this whole month, looking back, I didn't do much trading this month. I did a lot of watching. Now, a big part of that was due to the fact that I was at work and anything could pull me away. I actually confided in my general manager today. Like, I had one morning where I had some call options from the night before, and it opened up that morning high, and it was my intent to sell them. Right it open at 6:30. But when I showed up to work, there was a lady screaming at the front desk clerk because he let her drunk, angry, armed with a gun husband know which room she was in after she fled to the hotel to escape.
Right.
Right. So, like, she's in the right.
Yeah.
So I walk into, like, this crazy lady. And by the time I got to my computer, it was like 6:40. And I think it was AMC options. It was going down. And, like, I sold it for a profit, but I left, like, $2,000 on the table.
Sorry, Dan. That's a horrible excuse. That story wasn't strong enough to prevent you from checking in on your call options. All right? A man with a gun angry in the lobby is a no-go. You should have told them, listen, sir, hold that hammer back. Give me 5 minutes. I got an option play here.
I love writing on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he wasn't. Yeah. Anyway, regardless, the only thing I've really been playing with, was I made a trade yesterday and I made a trade today. that was my big moves for the month.
And you made a big career move too, Dan. Like, yeah. Understandably, there's a lot of stuff going on, right, in your life. Yeah.
Didn't you tell your boss something awesome too?
The hotel owner actually came in yesterday and he was like, I'm really sad to see you go. You know, you can work, you know, weekend shifts. You can come back to work whenever you want. And I'm like, no, I think I'm good. And he's like, well, you know, I just worry because stocks are gambling and I know you'll be back here. And I told him, I said, you know, there are days where I make more money than your hotel does and I don't have the overhead.
So good. What a good response. And true.
Yeah.
What was his reaction? Just a blank face?
His reaction was, it's gambling, Dan. I know it's gambling. My relative played stocks and lost so much money. I said, okay.
You're one person that you know?
Yeah. Generally, when somebody says the two words played stocks, it tends to speak that there wasn't really much of a strategy involved. Like, that's what I find. Like, so many people are prevented from doing this trading thing because, you know, of a story from somebody who either in the family or a friend who got hurt, but they never managed to find out why. You know, they never even learned the lessons through that person. They just scared and that's it. It's like, oh, it's gambling and that's it.
Well, I think you've alluded to this many times before. So many people think it's a get rich quick scheme.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Dan and I realized when we first started our journey just how much effort was going to be required to try to turn this into, you know, a full-time career.
Yeah.
But it's just as much, if not more, than the effort I was putting in at my 9-to-5 job before I quit.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, right. It's like, oh, this could be a side hustle, and I'm starting to pick out the boats and cottages I want, and then you get into it, and you get a rude awakening, but that's part of the journey.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that Lambo.
Yeah, win Lambo, win.
You know, Lambo's like the, I don't know. How tall are you, Kyle?
I don't want a Lambo. I love my height. Oh, Dan, consequences. I'm going to spring them on you right now.
Oh, shit.
All right. So I've come up with two ideas. One of them is going to be minimal effort, but maximum pain. And the other one's going to be extreme effort, but probably not nearly as painful.
Well, I think we know which one I'm going to pick, but continue.
All right, so the more effort's going to be that I think that you need to get more in touch with our Canadian neighbors. And so what I'd be proposing is that Laura and I will coordinate with George to come up with some recipes of some authentic Canadian cuisine that we're going to send to you, and you're going to have to cook one of these dinners and report on it once a week for the rest of the month.
Okay.
So that'll be things like, I think as George said, probably focusing around maple syrup and whale blubber.
Yeah, are there any whales in Arizona anywhere nearby? No. Dan?
No, I'm going to have to do some research to see what we can actually send them, because I do try to make these non-cost, you know, the person who signs has to pay for this stuff.
Yeah, I can't get whale blubber.
I'll figure out I'll make sure that I can get the ingredients sent to you for anything that happen to get assigned.
Okay. All right. Well, what's the other one?
The low effort, maximum pain is, I feel like the random stock has not been doing very well and could probably use a bit of a helping hand. So for the rest of the month, then before we reveal the bet results, you'll have to flip a coin to determine whether or not you switch with the random.
Oh, damn.
Each week.
Oh, damn. Well, I'm cooking me some whale blubber, fellas.
Damn it. I was really hoping you'd go for that one. That one hurts me too, though. Keep in mind, because if you make random super good, then we both have to do something dumb.
It's an interesting proposition.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of doing really well and not being able to get to keep my bet total.
I know.
I would rather lose honestly than swap with random for the win.
I heard for random's win.
Yeah,
I don't think Bitcoin's doing too well this week.
Well, you should be sweating based on how AMC's been doing this week.
Oh, my week's already looking like it's over. This is my last ditch hope to maybe try to make us both do something dumb instead of me. That's all right. You got, we'll give you until the end of the episode here to make your final decision on that.
Okay. All right.
You guys are so nice to each other. I love this show.
These aren't the kind of consequences you imagined?
No, you know, getting in touch with your Canadian side means being a little more gentle, saying sorry to one another, you know, like...
Saying part of that means he needs to call up some of the people he's wronged and maybe do like the what is it?
The alcoholic 12 steps. AA.
Yeah.
Yeah, now there would be a good consequence.
Gotta make amends.
Yeah.
It's part of your Canadian punishment.
Here's a hard one.
Stop encouraging Kyle. Stop spitballing, please.
Yeah, this is how you end up reading a terrible, trashy romance novel.
Oh, God. Yeah, it is. It is. It was originally going to be Twilight. Oh, what did I do?
All right, should we get back to the show?
Nah. Just kidding, yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah, we can call it.
Oh, boy. All right, so let me go back there and see if I did anything else.
Did you do any of your wheel options this month?
I did some of it, but not as much. And I think I've been neglecting that a lot because I've just been so excited to deal with futures.
Mm-hmm.
And good, that's, man. Well, the part of the problem with that is that it's going to cut into my income for next month.
Right.
But imagine the months after. Like, there's definitely potential there.
That's kind of what I'm hoping for. Like I did tell the wife that I feel like the future is actually, it's the one thing that's felt like it has the best potential to actually be sustainable long-term.
Yeah, I'm biased when I say this, but it's good.
One of the things that I was super, that really left an impression on me when we were talking, or when I was listening to some of the episodes was when you talked about being able to see the entire order book.
Yeah.
So anybody who places a trade goes through the CME. There's no dark pool. There's no hiding, orders through. There's no manipulation of put contracts or options contracts. Like, it just feels so much more honest.
Yeah. That's like the biggest, that is the whole edge of the strategy we use. It's being able to see that centralized order flow.
Mm-hmm.
And, it tends to, I don't want to say easier, but it makes the process more quantifiable, if you will. It makes it more transparent and you're not really second guessing, like, you know, is it one person? Is it two people? Like, you're seeing raw, unfiltered, you know, trade by trade data.
It feels honest.
Yeah, exactly. And Canadians like that. So that's the market.
Now, can you tell us a little bit more about the differences between like oil and like the S&P futures?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you mentioned at one point that you said more professionals trade oil. I was curious to hear you talk a little bit more about what that means.
Yeah, yeah. So the oil market is different, right? Oil is a commodity. Pretty much everything that you eat is packaged in oil. Everything you drive is powered by oil, mm-hmm. Tesla included.
Yep.
Right? Oil is used to produce electricity of the cars, and it's just fuel, right? So everything really requires oil in this world. It's called black gold. And the thing with oil is the supply and demand market. So, you know, it's actually a thing that's drilled and extracted from the ground and serves a tangible purpose. Like, it isn't paper value. It's actually like energy. Right. Mm-hmm. So what makes the market really full and dense with professional traders is a lot of companies use oil to offset some of their expenses. So, for example, airlines hedge using oil and gasoline futures, right? On their expense side, producers who actually extract this thing from the ground are hedging out their exposure as well to be able to protect the price in the future. And a lot of people who aren't really speculative traders deal in that market at certain levels. And also, if you look at it in terms of just day trading, you know, oil is a very pure price structure market, meaning that when you look at price analysis, it does what it's supposed to, and it does it really well. Whereas S&P is a little more noisy. It'll run above a level, come back down, and then reverse, right? It's a little more like dicey that way. But with order flow, you're able to really eliminate the head fake moments to a large extent. Not all of them, obviously. You get stopped out at times. But oil is a very pure supply and demand driven market. Very nice price structure. The only reason I didn't recommend new people start with it in the past is because it didn't have a micro product. It was just a full scale contract. Oh. Just $1,000 per dollar of movement in oil. And that's all you could do. Yeah.
I was curious because you said more professionals trade it. I was wondering if you can use like a poker table as an example. Like, do you necessarily want to be sitting down at the table with all the professionals, or would you rather be sitting at the one with all the fish?
Yeah, right. Like,
do you think there's some of that too, or is that not an apt comparison?
No, that's a great comparison. Yeah, like, you know, you're changing hands with more professional traders because, you know, futures is a little known market to begin with, and then oil is kind of, most people trade oil with ETFs or energy companies, you know, and they're like, hey, you're an oil trader, that's great, what energy company do you like? It's like, I don't like companies, I just buy oil, right? And and then, there is a lot more professionals in the market, and the neat thing about it is that because everyone gets on the trade at the same time, same levels, you know, people do lose money. But again, on the professional side, some of those people are being are going short as the market rallies. So there's enough money that you could pick up off of, you know, in front of the steamroller, even with a densely professional participant market. It's so, like, look, for example, when oil explodes higher, some producers will actually have to sell the futures to hedge out. So there's always back and forth trade. And yeah, I think they're comparable in that. Yes, there's retail in S&P mostly, and a lot of institutional traders as well. With oil, there's a lot of pros, but there's also a lot of people both on the bid and offer, which make it super tradable. Not everyone day trades it like us, right?
Yeah, and that's something that I keep forgetting too, is like you said, there's so many people involved in the chain that have to make those hedges.
Yeah, it's huge.
And protect their product. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense, that why it would follow structure so much better.
Yeah, like oil on its own. Sorry, Dan, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask, do you ever trade contracts longer than day trading? Is there a money to be made in like leaps on futures?
So, you know, there's actually options on futures as well, which you could take advantage of if you wanted to hold positions. The thing with holding positions in futures is that, you know, they're 23 hours a day now because they removed the 15-minute halt every day. So they run 23 hours a day, and it starts Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern. So there's opportunity to day trade them, but because the leverage is so big, you're going to get knocked out of a trade because you have to have a really tight stop. Like if you're swing trading oil, you know, and your level's $2 away, that's $2,000 a contract of risk. And there's no real way to reduce that until now with the micro product, of course. So you can swing trade. The only thing I don't like about swing trading markets with futures is that sometimes in that 1 hour difference, there's a big gap that could happen, and you could run into some issues there where, you know, especially on oil. Oh my God, holding oil overnight just gives me heart palpitations. This is one of those markets where literally, like, you know, a pipeline can get bombed and you're on the wrong side of that. There's a 7% and you can't even get out. You don't have a stop loss because the market hasn't opened yet. Okay. So, yeah, like it's kind of dangerous, and I wouldn't really do it unless I hedge it out with some option plays. So you could be long the futures and then, you know, sell some spreads against it, et cetera. But to answer your question in a very long-winded way, Dan, I don't swing trade it. There are times when I'll have remnants of a position, so I'll get long and I'll have, hey, I got two contracts left. Now, let's see if this thing can run overnight. But I never hold full size and get into a trade with an expectation of a multi-day position. So very rarely do I end up in that scenario, well, yeah.
And if you hold past the cash close, then you end up having a higher margin requirement too at that point, right?
Yeah, and you only have it for an hour. It's really fascinating the way futures work, because for that 1 hour that it's closed, anything goes. Like, anything can happen theoretically to change the price. And so while it's closed, the margin requirements increase. But when it reopens again at 6 p.m. Eastern after that 1 hour closure, margin requirements are back to the lower threshold, which is called day trading margin rather than maintenance margin. Well, that's confusing. The day trading margin is, let's say, with AMP, $400 a contract. Right. But within that 1 hour, if you want to hold for that 1 hour stretch, it goes up to 4,000 just in case something crazy happens. But the best way to do it is, you know, sell it at 3:50 p.m. or 4:50 p.m. Eastern, get rid of the position and reopen it again after 6 to avoid that risk.
That's funny. I thought that meant like the PM session was going to be where you needed the higher margin requirements.
You know, it's super confusing because some places call it overnight margin, like overnight margin. It's not overnight, just 1 hour. So brokers could protect themselves in a spooky event.
That makes a lot more sense that way.
Yeah. And that's futures.
I do have another question. Kyle and I were talking earlier today, my general chain of thought now, and I'm a few lessons, I'm like 5 or 6 lessons behind 11. I'm like going, I just finished the modules. I just finished VWAP. That's why I was singing it when you came on the call. I was thinking that I could watch like S&P, gold, and oil, and that way if one of them's having a sleepy day, I can look at one of the other ones and be like, oh, I can trade this one today. Is that something you do? Is that a viable strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. This summer, I was trading, you know, when it got really slow beginning of August, I was trading mostly oil. So I think between oil and the S&P 500 futures, you know, they're not very correlated. There is correlation between the two, but they're two different markets. So on any given day between the two, there's definitely an opportunity. When S&P is slow, sometimes oil moves a lot. There are days when they're both slow as well, but they're definitely less. So having a second market in your pocket, the ability to trade a second market definitely opens you up to more opportunity on slow days. And it's kind of interesting how it works. It's not opportunity in terms of I'm going to make more here. Trading oil as well as S&P sometimes prevents you from losing a lot of money on the S&P because you're bored and it's not moving, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're getting sucked into stupid trades. So it's not that it'll make you more. It'll help you avoid some of those big losing days in the long term. That's the cool part about it, having two market knowledge. And sometimes, you know, depending on the person, it could also be very distracting, something to consider, you know, switching between markets. You could start losing in both of them.
Right.
I think that was the conclusion that I came to, is like, I think I should probably master one of these first before I try to add another one.
Yeah, it's a great add-on market, I agree, but I would certainly like master one with consistency, and then adding the second one will be easier because a lot of what you learned in the first one is applicable to the second one too.
Let me ask you a question about ranges.
Yeah.
Do you find any value in trying to trade the range, or are you specifically looking for the breakout retest and grab the continuation move for the most part?
So on in the period between May to August, range trades work really well. So when, you know, that's the summer period when people start going on holidays and the market slows down. Historically, in the last 30 years, you take those months, they don't perform as well as the other months, right? So in the summer, it's almost like a whole separate strategy where, you know, in the other months, just buying lows will get you killed, right? In the summertime, buying these lows and range bottoms actually end up working out. And so there's sort of two strategies. And the two worst periods for me, you know, statistically and both, you know, mentally, is the crossover, like right now, basically, the ending of the summer market and the beginning of the more volatile one, because now you got to start almost utilizing a whole different strategy. And so to answer your question, in the opportunistic months, the non-summer months, I like trading the range, but I don't like selling at the range top. So let me give you an example. S&P moves up 10 points. All right. It pulls back, let's say 5 points. Right. And then it sits there and it ranges in a tight area for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, which in day trading is forever.
Right. Yes.
I would pick that range low for a limit to get long. And I would sell a little bit at the range high, but I would hold it with an expectation for a continuation up. So I wouldn't get long the range bottom, sell it at the range top, and then get short to flip the trade. You know what I mean? Because it's a momentum market. It's driven by a lot of movement. So I don't want to get my head chopped off by reversing the position. In the summertime, though, if it's stuck in a range, there are times when I'll grab the long at the bottom, sell it at the top, and then flip it short again. But you got to be careful when you do that range trade. The way I like to do it mostly is to range trade in the direction of the trend.
I was going to say that's exactly the conclusion I came to during my short-lived volatile sim trading period.
Yeah, it's a bullish market right now, right? So buying the bottom of the range is much better than trying to sell the top of it in a bull market. Ask me how I know. I had a horrible day trying to short.
Oh, I thought you did well today.
Yeah, today was decent. Yeah, but not this day, but the one that I talked
about. No, he's talking about last Friday.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Last episode, you know. Mm-hmm. It kind of sucked, but you know, that's no one said this was going to be easy or fun on some days.
Well, that's why don't we go back and revisit that, because I mean, thank you for sharing that on our show too. I really appreciate you opening up and giving us an insight into some of the struggles that you were having.
Yeah, of course.
I can't wait to have those struggles.
I know, right? Me too. I thought I was going to lose that much money. And be like, I better just take a break, guys. As far as recovering from that, then, like, can you walk us through, like, the steps that you took? Like how did you get to the point where you knew, okay, now it's time to take a break? Should you have recognized that sooner, do you think? Or are you happy with when you did? And do you think that you've gotten past it now?
Yeah, those are all great questions. You know, how do you so here's the thing. There's days where, you know, I'll lose money, obviously. And depending on if it was, there's days where it's a good loss. Meaning I traded the strategy well, as disciplined. Market condition was just shite and I couldn't really fight it. So yeah, I have a loss. I can't really be mad at those days because that's part of the game. Then there's days where I lose because of my own, I was the bottleneck. I created the loss. I completely ignored market conditions, ignored my plan. For whatever reason, I got sucked into it. And then those days, I tend to lose a lot, right? Those are the worst losing days. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, though, I can't be mad at that either because I did something stupid. how mad could you be on doing something stupid? It's like, you look at it, it's like, okay, I know it was dumb. And so now at least I have an opportunity to correct this, because when volatility comes in, that number would be much bigger. Mm-hmm. And I shared it on the show, and it was a 30,000 down day. So that could have been exponentially more. I was trading with big size. And so what that gives me an opportunity to do, Kyle, is to look at this and just improve myself. And it's, we all battle this. The more consistently profitable that we are, the better that we do. Because I had a really good summer up to that point. You know, the more consistently profitable we are, the more confidence we get, and the more dangerous and devastating that is. Mm. So even leading up to this day, I look at my performance every day. I look at the numbers with a lot of detail in terms of not just the win rate, so much more than that. I look at 10 to 15 metrics every day to kind of get a better feel as to what I actually did. And the days leading up to that loss, there were warning signs. Mm-hmm. And I knew it. It's like, look, the way I'm trading right now is making me money, but it won't for long. And I had the opportunity to correct it. I didn't. And the reason I didn't, I had some personal stuff going on. I think I've chatted with you guys with kind of the struggle of just balance between work life, home life, with my wife being in the same situation. She's an entrepreneur. We just lost our babysitter. She didn't die, but she went back to work.
Right. She might as well have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but she's dead to us.
She owed 50 G's to the Canadian mob, and I wouldn't loan it to her. Now she disappeared.
This is not true. Anything you hear is for entertainment purposes only.
Right.
Oh, shit, I blew up your spot.
If it should happen, it's just a coincidence. So I had an opportunity to work myself, and I didn't. And I talk about this with the team. It's cool running a trading room because, you get to trade with people. You're never alone. Mm-hmm. But it's also hard because there's days where you have to do the work where you necessarily shouldn't be. Do you know what I mean? I should have really taken off 2 weeks to after that big day. What I should have done there is I'm done. I'm going to start again after Labor Day because it was so close to the end of the summer anyways. And so sometimes having to push through that just creates more problems. So I had actually a few more down days, but they were within the confines of what I planned.
Right.
So it wasn't really a problem. So to answer your question, how do you work through it? You just have to stop, take the time, understand where the problem went wrong, understand what the cause is. Sometimes it's a trading problem. Sometimes it's a life issue. More often than not, when you screw up that big, it's something inside. It's personal. It's not trading related. You didn't follow the rules. The rules didn't let you down. Mm-hmm. It was the operator. So why did you decide to not follow the rules? And that's an introspective journey. And to be honest with you guys, I still haven't got a chance to do it. So I'm trading super small size until I do.
I struggle with that exact problem of, I know the rules. Why didn't I follow them?
I think we all do.
I think it happens. All do. It's an emotional business.
I was going to say, one of the things that I tried to start incorporating that kind of helps me, I was curious if you do something similar, is when I find myself making a move that I know I shouldn't be doing, I'll actually say it to myself, like, all right, I know this is stupid, but I'm going to do it anyway. And sometimes just the act of saying it out loud helps at least reinforce the fact that you know what you're doing is not right. Do you do anything similar to that? Like try to call out or at least acknowledge to yourself that you're not trading to plan?
I have a sticky on my monitor that saves me more times than not. Like, I don't know how much money it saved me, because when you avoid losses, you don't know how much you would have lost, right? So it's
right.
That's like the most important variable of trading, how much you've avoided losses. That never shows up in any statements or results. But I have a sticky and it says three words, and these three words of like avoided massive losses for me. And if you want to hear them, you need a credit card number. No, I'm kidding. The three words, it's a process over profits. I can't tell you, like, I don't think there's been one single day where I've gotten butchered following a process. I think the days where I have a hard time is I decide, hey, I need more money. I need to make more. And then now I'm trading for money. And when I'm trading for money, the problem is that that's what you're valuing in your trading day. Mm-hmm. And so when you lose money, now you're getting further away from the goal. Whereas if you, even if you lose a trade and you're focused on process, you're still following process. A loss is a part of the process. Whereas if you're out there chasing a return, it's like the moment you lose money, now you're further away from the goal and you start to panic. Maybe not, you won't admit that, you know, that you consciously are panicking, but subconsciously, you're so far away from the goal and moving in the opposite way, you start taking drastic corrective measures. So what I do is I always look at it at the screen, process over profits. And usually I'm like, hey, look, this is a profit type of trade. I'm trying to make money with this trade, which is why it's so stupid. You know, it's like you look at it on the chart. It's like this trade just looks dumb. And sometimes I even catch it in the moment. I'm like, it even looks stupid now. I don't have to wait till 4 p.m. You know, that's my correct course measure is, am I trying to make money here? Or am I doing the process? Because trying to make money always generates losses. Trying to focus on the process, you know, the money part disappears, becomes a job.
I really like that. I really like that saying. I've noticed in my own trading that whenever I'm chasing profits, then I'm not paying attention to the structure and the indicators that tell me when to get out.
Yeah.
Because then you're too focused on either what you want to get or what you could have got. And then you're just hoping at that point.
Well, so here's the, this is a very interesting discussion here, Kyle and Dan, because when you focus on just making money, automatically based on that mission, every losing trade's a bad trade and every winning trade's a good trade, right?
Yeah.
And so let me give you an example. Maybe you did a textbook trade plan setup, but that was a loser. Mm-hmm. So in your process mindset, you just say, hey, look, you know, this is a risky business. There was a loss. Let me go back to the process, find another one. You're trading for profits. You're going to say, oh, well, you know what? It's a loss. I need to make it back. You're going to double up your size. You're going to hit it bigger. You're going to trade right after. You just got stopped out. You're going to get right back in.
Right.
You're going to do all these things because you want to make that money back. And at the end of the day, the worst thing that could happen on a day like that is that you're green. That's what happened to me. I broke every single rule for like 3-4 days, you know, in a week straight. I knew trouble was going to come and I kept closing green, like, you know, four figure days.
It's funny because I was listening to you even having that discussion with like the team, like, I'm down, but I've been down the last 3 days. I know I can trade myself out of it.
Exactly. And you can until you can't, right? Until that one day where it's like, okay, well, there you go. It's like you get punched in the head and you keep getting up. You start getting confident with being punched in the head. One of those times, you're not going to get up if it's repeated too many times.
I love that analogy.
And that's what happened to me. Yeah.
But how much do you learn from getting flicked in the nose versus getting punched in the face, right? You're going to remember what you did to get yourself punched in the face, I think, a lot more than just annoying somebody enough to flick you on the nose.
See, that's the problem. It's like the bee is buzzing around and you're swatting it and it leaves. You don't really remember that until you get butchered. So this is why, like, we're doing a podcast episode on metrics that you need to use for your trading analysis other than just the win rate.
Mm-hmm.
This is why it's important to review what you're actually doing, right? It's like, I read somebody on Twitter said, all that matters in trading is the final profit or loss. And I facepalmed. I'm like, okay, this is a good podcast topic because this is horrible. That person's going to blow out, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all about looking at the metrics and separating your thought process. If you're going to do this as a career, the reality is a winning trade is not a good trade and a losing trade is not a bad one always. So you got to sort of look at the numbers and on your great days, don't go on and look at cottages and get all excited. Be really, you know, critical of yourself. Okay, it's a good day, but what could I learn?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a bad day, do the same thing. It's a bad day, but what could I learn? And I think that people only do analysis and trade reviews on the days they lose, and that's when they're emotional. But on the days that you win, that's when you get away with a lot of bad habits and you can catch that early on.
So otherwise, you just end up reinforcing them if you keep getting away with it.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't want to deal with a bad winning day, you're eventually going to have to deal with it on the bad losing day. And it won't be a small bad losing day. It'll be a horrible losing day.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's a whole different discussion. Now you've been set back.
I like the process over profits because I think Dan and I have used that a similar saying when we do our good, the bad, and the ugly reviews. There's been a couple occasions where I think we've said, what was it, method over results? Or we didn't have something nearly as catchy.
Yeah, method over results.
Separating the method from the results. And there's been several times where we've had a good trade that we've filed under bad because it was just a stupid trade to take at the time.
Yeah.
I did this, but there was no reason that I can actually quantify that I would ever do again.
Yeah, this is the wrong thing to do, but I made money on it. So it's bad. It's bad.
But isn't it funny how we'll do a 9-to-5 job that we absolutely hate for a paycheck? Like every single day we're losing, but we do it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but then you go to trading and the moment you lose a dollar, you're like, holy crap, can I even do this? You know what I mean? Like, right. Your whole life goes in shambles. You have a midlife crisis because you're down $4 on the micros. It's like, you know, we just have to keep things in perspective. It's like, if this is going to be a job, it's going to have to be processed. If you want to have fun, then treat it like a hobby and gamble and all that. Sure, you know what? Go for profits. Post them all on Twitter. You know, share with everybody, high five and stuff. Don't post any of your losers. Only put up your winners. But know that it's not going to be a career. Deep down, no matter what you're showing, you deep down are not confident about what you're doing. It'll never become a career until it's process focused. Right. And I think
if somebody doesn't share their losers, I don't think that there's somebody that you want to follow anyway.
Yeah. But that's what the whole like FinTwit is all about, right? It's like this like gain porn that you know, it's called. I hate it. I hate seeing how so much made because even if you had a fantastic day and you made $100, but you're brand new and you're like, yeah, I'm up. And some guy says, you know, what's $100? I'm up like 30 grand today. It's like now suddenly you feel like you did something wrong.
Right.
More you're going to do something stupid. And, you know, that's why it irks me kind of in the wrong way. But, you know, you're right. You got to surround yourself by the right influences for sure.
I always try to focus on percent too, not necessarily dollar amount. Sorry, Dan, didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah. No, that's very true. That's the same thing for me. Like, I want to know the percentage. I don't care the dollar amount. But no, I found this week especially, once I put in my 2 weeks and was like, I'm going to do this full time. I'm going to trade full time. I stopped myself on a lot of trades, and I only entered the last two trades I've entered have been, you know, after doing some technical analysis and finding the levels and being like, okay, I'm going to day trade this option. I'm going to buy eBay. I'm going to sell eBay. I'm going to buy Disney. I'm going to sell Disney. I found that the dollars in my portfolio felt more precious, and I had to apply my skills and knowledge and not be just rolling the dice.
Whole different ball game when you know it's a career, right? It's like this thing has to work because now this is my what I had reliable income before. Now this is my reliable income.
Yes.
And my God, could it be unreliable? So I'd better like treat the process, you
know? Right.
So, yeah. When I first resigned from work, I wrote my resignation letter and actually sat at my desk for 9 months. Fun thing, actually, my prior boss's boss, who I was more in a better reporting relationship with than my actual boss, I actually resigned to him and gave him the letter. And we actually still stay in touch. I go for dinner and lunches with him quite often. Great guy.
Nice.
I gave him the resignation.
Does he make fun of you for sitting there for 9 months after you resigned?
Well, like that was we have a laugh about that. He's like, you know, this resignation letter is great, George. I'm happy for you and your career. You know, I think it's the right move, but I need another one. I'm like, what? He's like, this is dated 9 months ago. So he's like, but I am happy for you. You're just gonna have to change the date. And I was like, oops.
Sorry, I thought you gave it to him 9 months ago and just kept sitting at your desk.
Oh no! I gave it. I wrote it and sat on it for 9 months, and then you know what he told me at the end? He's like, now I know why you've been doing so shit in the last 9 months. Like, you checked out. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't sound like a very good boss if he's not having an employee review with you then.
Yeah, no, he's he's great. We did the reviews. Yeah. The thing is, like, I could pull my weight with little effort in the position I was at. I was very comfortable, so it was like it was easy to get away with, you know, trading full time, to be frankly honest with you, and working part time.
Mm-hmm. Were you doing your own trading at the desk too, or?
Oh, 100%. So the last the last part of my career was Scotiabank. It was actually like we can get really long into this. When I was at Scotiabank, I had a chance to actually join like the there's two trading desks. One you're working with retail, and then one you're working with the financial advisors. I had a chance to join that, and then it was so restrictive. Compliance reviews, you couldn't trade certain shares, certain things, you couldn't do futures. So I declined it. I'm like, I actually don't want that job. I like what I'm doing now. And I moved a little bit more into like business development. Like, look, I'm realizing that being a professional trader means you're trading other people's money and you can't trade yours. You don't have time. And legally, compliance reviews it all and they're going to ask you questions. So I moved into like a business development role and I was on the road a lot. So I would have to visit Scotiabank branches and meet with clients, talk about investments and their financial advisors. And I figured out the strategy, which meant, hey, I could be in my car and on the road in traffic 5 days a week, or I could use the damn phone and be motivational on the phone. I stayed at home and placed phone calls while I'm working my trade. I was on the phone call with financial advisors and they're like, wow, this is a great, like I did, you know, calls virtually, like everyone does Zoom now. Back then, that was innovative. And I would actually in the presentation be like, guys, can you just give me one moment? I got to move my stop loss. And they understood. They loved it. What a better way to learn from somebody about investing than somebody who's doing it, right?
Can you stop waving that gun, please, and shouting at my employee?
Look, I got some options I need to sell.
Listen, sir, what you're saying is important to me, but first.
just one little thing, and what are you raving about?
That's so funny.
Oh, boy. Well, I was thinking about sending you my screenshots of the levels I plotted this morning on my first day of observation, but I don't know that make very good radio.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things that we could take that are dull through voice and then enhance them a little bit. I think that's just boring. You know what I mean? I don't even think your guys' like good humor and ability to put on a sick podcast would be able to do that justice. But
we've tried.
If you want to send me it's just too dull. But Kyle, if you want to send me a Discord message, I'd be happy to send you some bullet points back when the kid falls asleep.
Maybe I'll do that on Friday, just over the weekend. Give myself a week of trying to learn myself.
Yeah, you know, that's cool. Yeah, keep it personal for now until you know what? That's a good point. Sometimes you don't want people's feedback. And so I think this is a good time to not look for it. Just build up a little body of work and then go from there. But I'm here for you is what I'm saying.
No, I appreciate that. Actually, that's interesting because I remember you posting on Twitter at one point, like if you'd be interested in seeing people's entries or if that would distract you. And I think initially I thought like I'd rather see the entries. And if it distracts me, then at the point where I was on my journey, I'd be questioning why I had wanted to take a different position as opposed to, you know, I felt like it would save me more than it would hinder me. But when I was listening in on the options room, or the day trading room for the last, before I went on vacation, trying to sim trade, I did actually find it quite distracting.
With the fills?
With the, when I would try to take a different position and then I'd hear somebody else say that they're going short. I've even heard you two guys going like today, I think you were long and then Z was short.
The other way around. I think he was.
Yeah.
But for sure. Yeah. We're on the opposite sides. And we talk about that on text. I'm like, hey, man, like, talk about levels analysis, not positions, because you're going to really throw people off. It's like somebody's in the club having a good time, like they're dancing with a girl, and you walk in, you're like, bomb! And then you walk out. You're going to. In this day and age, you're going to freak people out. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what it does. This is why when I saw Twitter and the poll said most people want to see Phils, I'm like, well, this means that to sell courses, tell people you're going to show Phils for sure. That's what I would do if I had no integrity. But when the Twitter poll came out with more people wanting to see Phils, I'm like, this means then this is conclusive evidence that I'm no longer showing Phils. Because no offense, like, you know, what people think on Twitter tends to be pretty opposite of what real development's like.
As much as I would love to see the Phils, I don't feel like there's as much value in there. I think more of the value comes from trying to see the structure, understand the structure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, by the time you show up as a paramedic on the scene and there's blood on the ground, you're not going to prevent the accident. And I think This is what happens. Like, my Phil is literally irrelevant to what you're going to do. At best, sure, it could make you money, but then you're not confident as to why you made money. So you made $30 today, but you lost confidence. At worst, you're going to be following my crappy bias on the one day that you're like, you know, like, hey, I just got this stupid idea stuck in my head and I have to lose a certain amount of money to learn a lesson. You don't have to learn it. You know, and on the day, this is funny, on the day that I was down that massive number, 30K in one single session, it was a 72% win rate in our trading room with live capital. So go figure.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think, and that's why we don't show Phils.
Yeah. You do show them after the fact, or? Well, I noticed you were doing that today, which I did appreciate that. Like, okay, here's where I bought after the trade was over.
Yeah, that's how I usually do it.
And I feel like that's a teachable moment. I like that better, I think.
Yeah, remove the like, let everyone make their own decision and then learn from my decision. But Retrospectively, I have showed them in real time. We've gone to a lot of different variables, like showing them in real time, pulling them, not showing them at all, reviewing them. And when I show them in real time, the traders who make bank in their community, who are extremely well at doing this, who love being around our community and team, which is what gives value to our community. Mm-hmm. You know, it can't be called Trade Pro.
Right.
And it's a bunch of like people on day one trying to fight with each other.
Yeah.
Those people leave. Like, I've had emails of people telling me, if you keep showing your Phils, I'm gone. This is not what I'm here for. Like, I'm going to literally leave and find another community. Wow. And then, yeah, on the days where I don't show any Phils, new traders like, how the hell am I supposed to learn if I don't know when you're doing a trade? You know? There's always, like, there's always a balance. And I find it interesting. You know, this is based on personality, too. Some people learn differently. And, you know, we try to balance stuff. But I think the best balance is that word. Mm-hmm. Drink every time I say balance.
Right.
Balance is showing the fill after the fact, explaining why I got there, why I got in, and then people cross compare and reference it to what they did with their performance.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I like that a lot personally, and I would suggest to keep doing it if I had any say.
Well, you do, and we will.
All right. Do you share your levels at the beginning of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we put the focus on, levels. Real-time analysis of order flow. Maybe there's a big buyer at a certain zone where we think there's support. We like levels is the most important. In the beginning of the session, we set up a trading plan with this level, what we're going to do. And from there, when it gets to that level, then we start talking more in the real time. So the session starts out with overview, key levels, you know, key transition points, where we think there's going to be a support, if it breaks, what the target's going to be, etc. And then the market opens, and we're just trying to qualify those trades in real time together. With a focus on analysis, not like get in here, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. I was actually trying to make sure I got my levels done before you started yours, because I wanted to make sure I wasn't biased in any way. I wanted to have the comparison.
Yeah, that's awesome, honestly. Like, you know, you're going about it the right way, Kyle. You're not somebody who is going into like dependency, you know? And we do see that, unfortunately. Like, that's a way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Test your own knowledge, put it to test, and then that way, it's like, hey, I have my levels. Some people are like, oh, let me change my levels to yours. I'm like, no, mm-hmm. Keep them on the chart. Make it a different color line if you want to throw mine on there. But
yeah, see which one
keep yours better on there.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I followed Vico's options tweets for a while and was in the Discord chat for a bit. And I actually found myself at the point where I wanted to pull up the tweet to see which symbols he was tweeting so I could go see if I could get the levels before I read which ones he tweeted. And I felt like that was the exercise that really helped me improve.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's perfect. strongly recommend people. I think that's what you could learn from other traders that you follow on like Twitter, right? Is like you start to get their methodology on how they're getting in, how they're getting out. And I think that's how you really learn. What do you really learn from somebody tweeting, I made 30 grand? You know, great.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to send me some of that, I don't really care. Yeah. I like it. I appreciate it. I'm happy for your family. And I don't really care. I got to work on myself. Yeah. I'm already one kid's daddy. I don't need to be anyone else's. You know what I mean? Right.
Well, I think the whole thing kind of just goes back to what you're talking about before, too, as far as, or what we were just discussing about effort and not as many people realizing just how much effort you're going to have to put in to be successful.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that starts with the very beginning of when you get introduced to this journey. Some people do it for making quick money. They're like, oh, this is a nice little side hustle. And then some people are like, hey, you know what? This is actually something I would do for a career. And more times than not, the career people are the ones who end up being successful on a short and long-term basis. You know, just, this is like the worst place in the world to go for quick money. You're going to, you know, just go to the casino. You're going to get free alcohol. Right. And, you know, it'll be more fun. There's no need to gamble on a computer screen. That's just boring. Do it in like a grand fashion.
Yeah,
go to the casino.
Go to the casino and play video poker.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I guess not that much.
All right. Well,
I think kind of running out of stuff, huh?
Hey, if we wrap it up now, I don't even need to edit it.
Oh, yeah, because it's right at 1 hour. Well, there's some dead spots I want you to take out. Please. There's a couple points where I was trying to make notes.
Oh, so I want to tell you this story that's 45 minutes and it's about nothing, really.
Oh, please.
Should I start now?
Please do. Okay. Dan will do that when you start wrapping up anyway.
Let me just read a Jerome Powell speech.
Oh, I did have a story I wanted to tell. It was dark and foggy out on the dew there in the meadows and the hills of old Killarney, Ireland. The year was 1848.
How long ago?
Her hair was a dark red, smoky auburn. And what's our podcast about again?
Wow.
I don't know if it was the context of the story or the way your voice changed, but I got a little creeped out. I'm going to be honest with you.
That's Dan's announcer voice. Well, we resolved one bet.
I lost on the SPXS.
We need to resolve another one.
Yeah. My answer doesn't change, and the joke's on you. I love to cook.
Yeah, I know you do. I just was wondering how much you're going to like eating, you know, moose knuckles and that kind of stuff, or whatever George helps me come up with.
Nobody eats moose knuckles.
Oh, I don't know.
Unless it's filthy, vulgar slang then from the late 90s.
It is.
True Canadian cuisine is like things that survive in the cold. And I think that's like fat, you know, any kind of fat. It doesn't have to be whale blubber. It could be any kind of blubber, but whale blubber is preferred.
I've noticed that there's a lot of the entries that I was looking at. Every list had wild nuts and berries and random game animals as an entry. And I mean, literally, right. It said just game meat. It didn't have any specific one.
Whichever one you managed to capture, hunt, yes. Kill, trap.
So I'm going to be sending you some snares.
Ba-doom-tsh. See what I did there?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. There you go.
Genius. Good genius.
Joke. So, George, you want to take another bet?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm down. You know, I did so great in the first one. Why not do it again? You know, the SPXS bet was actually up at one point. I could have got out of profit, but I know. I wouldn't have.
Yep. I saw that. I was getting nervous because that was when BB was starting to retract.
Yeah. Yep. I was sure. What is it for? The whole month of September?
Yeah.
Long VIX. VIX.
What?
Oh,
that's Dan just bought some VIX calls today.
That's a good call, Dan. You're doing it at the perfect time.
Yeah. I know, and I've got shit for it on the Discord server.
I just questioned your decision. Mm-hmm. I was a little nervous because the flow contracts you're looking at were all traded on the bid.
Yeah,
There's a lot of scary stuff coming up in the next like 30 days.
Yeah,
there is. For the market. I don't know. Look, here's the thing with VIX. I would buy it. But I mean, this is not financial advice or recommendation or solicitation to purchase any securities. But like, I wouldn't put a lot of money into it. I wouldn't like hinge my whole boat. Like, it's not a do or die trade. It's just something I'd take a little like bite out of, right?
Yeah.
The reason being, it's a great place to do it, a good time to do it as well. There's a lot of stuff coming for the market. And this isn't a bet. So how do I say this? When the market eventually drops, no one times it correctly.
Yeah.
The person who does call the drop has called it incorrectly the past 15 times, and they're finally like,
Michael
Yay.
Berry.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But tis the time of the year for a little bit of a pullback. I was seeing a bit of a complacent long. I'm going to try the VIX.
Nice.
Just a little bit, though. It's not a make or break. I'm not putting my whole career on the line on this trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, wait till you see the consequences.
Oh, shit.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, we're going to trade gonna businesses. Have to-
Trading places. I was going to make him go to an old folks home and try and convince two people he's related to them.
I feel like we should just sit on it and try it. Oh, that's really good. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No, I'm your son. Don't you recognize me?
Oh, man. Watch me actually find the two people I'm related with that I didn't know. Like, that would be how my life goes.
Is that little Georgie over there? Story. I haven't seen you since you were 4 years old, boy.
Is that Big Poppy?
Yeah. Big Poppy!
I love that my Bulgarian, whatever it would be, grandfather or uncle that you're impersonating has that accent. It's amusing.
I don't even know what a Bulgarian accent sounds like.
Well, I have some consequences for you if you lose the bet then.
Oh, fine.
Right.
You got to do a song in Bulgarian.
Oh, God. What are we going to pick, Kyle?
I was going to let you pick.
You're going to let me pick for the whole fucking month?
Do you not want to?
Oh, it's just a lot of pressure.
Otherwise, I was looking at CVM, but I don't know that I necessarily want to ride
your
consequences on that.
On CVM, no, I think that's risky.
Yeah, after you just went VIX, I think you either need. Ooh, I don't know. That the VIX can really explode if something catastrophic happens.
Well, that's just it. Is it like the S&P could end the month even, but with the volatility spike in the middle, you know?
Right.
Well. You know what's in my personal portfolio.
You know what I actually am thinking.
Virgin Galactic?
You want to roll some dice?
Oh shit! What are the what are the potential outcomes?
I need a one or a two.
Oh my god!
So I got something better for you guys.
What's that?
I have my son here, and he usually makes a few sounds. He says or guh. So if he says one or the other, you guys could pick a stock. Say hi. Oh, I don't.
what one was that?
Two. So choose number two.
Okay. Now I need a 1 through 12.
All right. Hey, bud, you got 12 sound effects in you? You're going to need to step up. Come up with some words.
Just give me a sector you want, Dan.
I want utilities.
Public utilities?
Any spine with me.
SJI.
Oh, God. That's our pick?
That would be our pick.
Okay. South Jersey Industries.
It doesn't look like a terrible pick, actually.
Well, I mean, let's you call this, since March, a rounding top.
It's been on a steady upstream. SJI? You looking at the right one?
Yeah, South Jersey Industries.
My charts, I can't load into my trading view. So I'm going to just say, yeah, I agree.
You know what? That's fine. Let's do it. SJI. In honor of Jersey Shore.
Let's beat George with a random stock and let him know how it feels.
If you guys win, I'm not even coming back on the show. I don't even care what happens. I'm out. I can't beat you with a random. That's not fair.
See, we're in your head. Mm-hmm. I've done that to Dan at least once before, where I've taken his Castaway, or I've been wanting to short one of his stocks one of these times just to really fuck with him.
Yeah,
not post full time trading, Dan. Gambling Dan, you should be short, but not this one. This guy's focused. He's coming here to. He's not messing around.
His last two trades have been like 100% gainers. I've been like, oh my god, I think I just switched places.
I have to stop lying to my wife, guys.
What's that?
I thought I'd mention this. I know it's a weird thing to say, right? Is he about to conclude? I keep telling her these podcasts are going to be like 20, 30 minutes. Then I have so much fun with you guys, I lose track of time. And so now, not only do I have consequences for losing a trading bet, I'm going to have consequences at home.
Right, for taking so long.
Well, for just lying to her.
I scheduled an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, folks, we're so glad you joined us. We want to thank you again, George. You're awesome. We love having you here in the shop. Always a great time. Always knowledgeable. And thank you, Kyle, for coming back to the shop. I mean, you abandoned us. It was so cold and lonely without you.
Say that like you meant it.
Kyle, I am so glad you're back.
I listened to the last episode. It was way better.
Well, I didn't want to call you a dead weight, but now that the topic's out there, folks, have a great day, have a great week, have a great month. We'll be coming back at you soon. Until then, happy trades.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much. Been an honor. I get lost in time when I talk to you guys. It's great.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.